figure out what's effective. And if we start with the newspaper, start with the ethics and the mandate so that we dispose that. And then we'll go, because we're rushing, we said we want this thing in the system of parliament so that then we can deal with it early next year. After that, we'll deal with the other item. Yes, they're checking these numbers before we start saying these things, and on behalf of their provinces, they're not here. I welcome the special delegates from this MKT outing. We'll move that to become the permanent delegates here. So they're always here. They must have both houses. It is also because we're going to start with the Eastern Cape. So they leave the mandates as they are, per province in alphabetical order. So we start about getting the mandate of the Eastern Cape and hand over to the delegate. Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Chair and members. Our mandate is as follows. The province votes in favor of the bill and mandates the Eastern Cape delegate to the SOP to negotiate in favor of the bill within the following parameters. Clause 6, Special Economic Zone Strategy. In the absence of a finalized SEZ strategy and a declaration of intent on matters subject to final SEZ regulations, there remains some unease, therefore, over the degree of exposure of zones participants to a substantial body of the date that will be applied sub-legislatively. This will emerge with the incoming SEZ program's exercise of the range of matters in the bill that the minister may prescribe, sometimes in conjunction with other ministries, such as finance. It would appear
just a minute. I just want to propose. I don't know whether all of you have got this page, which has some out of provincial negotiation mandate. Martin, maybe there's something we didn't do right. That is why Martin is not giving it. Honorable Adams does say that don't mess up with Martin. You sleep at the airport. What you are trying to do, honorable member, maybe from your negotiation mandate, is either you read the clause. We've tried from the front here to summarize on this piece of paper, which is just a reference, which you could not read for. But on a negotiating mandate, just say proceed special economic zone strategy. And then the other one is clause 7, where you're making these contributions. And so that then we deal with whatever the Eastern Cape is saying, looking at them.
Okay, thank you very much. Can I look into the summarized version?
Up to you. You can choose. You have read the mandate. That's fine. You can do whatever.
Okay. The architecture of governance structures, the decision-making process in terms of policy and strategic direction and regulatory processes of the ITZ, and the issues of intergovernmental coordination, especially as it relates to consultation across the three spheres of government and expansion for precision and clarity of process dealing with incentive support measures and packages. We are not necessarily calling for the overhaul of the bill, Chair, but there are two fundamental issues for us. One, issues of governance structures. The second matter, Chair, is the issue of funding. which is clearly not clarified in the bill. And those are the two fundamentals for us. Thank you, Chair.
I will note that. I will come back when the learned friends come and respond after I've gone through all of them. Which one is the next one? There's nothing from Free State. Nothing from Free State. Okay. Gauteng.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members, and good morning, officials from the department. The Gauteng Provincial Legislature supports the principles and the details of the bill with the proposed amendments. I'll quickly talk to them, Chair, particularly on the committee recommendation, that the committee proposed the following amendments to the bill, that on section 25, page 12, after the line 32, to insert subsection 7. Here, Chair, we talk to the things that we like to see the regulation for the bill granted to the powers to the minister, that we propose that the composition of the Special Economic Zone Board, that the minister must make regulations in terms of the office of the Special Economic Zone Board, that the minister also must make regulations in terms of the function of the Special Economic Zone Board, that the minister should make regulations on the code of good conduct and disclosure of interest for the Special Economic Zone Board, that the minister also should make regulations on the matter which in terms of this act is required for a proper implementation of or administration of this act. Then we quickly go to 7.1.2, that's section 38, page 16, after line 47, to insert that section 4, that the minister must make a regulation regarding the prescribed time period applicable for the Special Economic Zone Board to decide on the approval or disapproval of a license of an application to locate a business within a Special Economic Zone. Then B, that again the minister should make regulations regarding the practices and procedures to have an appeal sought against the decisions of the Special Economic Zone. All in all, Chair, we support the bill as the housing legislation, and we fully give the mandate to a permanent delegate. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks very much. We'll come back to that. KwaZulu-Natal, the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development and Tourism met Tuesday, 19th November, and agreed to mandate the KwaZulu-Natal delegation to the National Cultural Provinces to support the Special Economic Zones Bill. So that will be KwaZulu-Natal. Mpumalanga.
Thank you, Chair. The Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Administration met on the 12th of November 2018, and it supports the bill with no amendments, except that there are some observations that can't just waste time because it's just for noting. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much. I went to Mpumalanga because there is no Limpopo. I think I must put it on record. There's one from Limpopo. Now there is one for Limpopo. For procedure's sake, I will read it. There's a meeting on the 19th of November. The committee, having gone through the bill, recommends to the NCOP permanent delegate to vote in favor of the bill, taking into consideration the amendments stated in the attached report. There are recommended amendments on page 2, establishment of the Special Economic Zones Advisory, same as the other one, functions of the advisory board, support measures, designation of special economic zones, governance and management of special economic zones. Those are proposed amendments. We'll get the feedback from legal people and departments. So Limpopo have done, Mpumalanga have done, Northern Cape.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. Chairperson, the Portfolio Committee on Finance, Economic Development and Tourism tabled the committee to negotiate the mandate on the special economic zones, and it was adopted by the Portfolio Committee on the 6th of November. There was a specific process that was followed, which included me briefing the committee. Public hearings were held in the province, and on the 6th of November, as I said, the committee deliberated and considered the special economic zones. Chairperson, there is no specific mandate that's proposed, but there's some important principles that needs to be considered specifically for a rural province like the Northern Cape. The first one is the establishment of the SEZ should not only be on cities and rural communities, also be considered to benefit from this establishment. And in terms of that, Chairperson, there's four very specific recommendations that's made, specifically regarding the envisaged regulations that might be promulgated at some stage. And that is that the first one, the special economic zone in the Northern Cape should not only be limited to the Upington Solar Park only. The second one is the Gamagara Mining Corridor should also be considered as a special economic zone. Then thirdly, Chairperson, the state diamond trader should relocate to Kimberley in order to promote diamond beneficiation in the Northern Cape in a special economic zone. And then lastly, Chairperson, the Northern Cape is the second largest producer of sheep wool in the country. The district municipality called Pixley-Kareme should be considered as a special economic zone for wool processing in the country. So what it in essence says, Chairperson, is that the current proposed special economic zones is not acceptable to the province, and that a broader sectoral approach would be considered when pronouncing itself on the borders of the special economic zone. But then coming to the committee's recommendation, the committee mandated me to support the vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Northern Cape, Northwest. The meeting on the 6th of November, the committee concurred with the Special Economic Zone Bill. The committee recommends that the advisory board should take more responsibility to make decisions around designation. The companies in the SEZ and the criteria of which businesses or services are offered in an SEZ and not have all powers residing in the ministry, as it creates more red tape. The Northwest Province votes in favor of the bill. Now let's come to the Western Cape.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, the Western Cape was briefed last week and met again this morning. It says that the Standing Committee on Finance, Economic Development and Tourism expects to report that it confers on the Western Cape delegation in the NCOP, the authority, to support the bill with the attached amendments. Now, if you look at the attached amendments in Clause 36, Subsection 2, Roman A, in line 7, after the word operator insert, and the Special Economic Zone Board. Clause 36, Subsection 3, in line 11, after the second D, to insert operator, and the. And the recommendation is there. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Thanks very much. I'll first give Charmaine the opportunity, after that the state law advisor, after that the department. And your responses, the responses of the department, we want to have them also written. must be able to give them to the secretary of the committee all their responses, whether immediately after this committee, but before the end of business today. All your responses. Charmaine?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members. I will only address those mandates where we are looking at recommendations or proposed amendments. If I may start with the Eastern Cape, it's not so much that specific amendments are proposed. I think it's more concerns that are expressed. And for me, those concerns relate more to actual implementation of this bill once it has become enacted. In relation to the governance structure, I can confirm to the committee that that is something that has been extensively unpacked in the National Assembly. And if necessary, we can do a similar presentation to this committee to unpack the roles of every part of the role players in this bill, just to show that these things are quite extensively set out in the bill. Also, we must keep in mind that this bill is not in isolation to the statute book of South Africa, or even in relation to normal commercial principles, such as good corporate governance, the King reports on good corporate governance, the normal risk measures that apply. So all of those aspects do apply to this bill, even though they are not expressly voiced in the bill. In respect, the Free State did not submit. Our team made certain proposals, and if I can take the committee through those proposals. The first proposal is on section 25, page 12, to insert a subsection 7 that deals with regulations. Now, if in the bill, then refer the committee members to page 17 of the bill, clause 41. Clause 41 reads, the Minister may, after consultation with the advisory board, make regulations regarding any matter which in terms of this act is required or permitted to be prescribed, any ancillary or incidental administrative or procedural matter that is necessary to prescribe for the proper implementation or administration of this act. So there is a catch-all regulation clause in this bill. It is not necessary for additional regulation clauses to be inserted. Furthermore, if I can take the members through each proposal in respect of which it is recommended that regulations be made, on the composition of the Special Economic Zone Board and the term of office of the Special Economic Zone Board, let us first investigate what the Special Economic Zone Board is. The Special Economic Zone Board is defined on page 4 of the bill as the board of directors of an individual special economic zone entity appointed in terms of clause 25.5. Now, if we go to clause 25, which is on page 12, we see a licensee must appoint a special economic zone board which must be responsible for the efficient governance and management of the business affairs of that special economic zone entity. What we are dealing with here is not a board that equates to the advisory board. The advisory board is a governmental structure. It is totally different from the Special Economic Zones Board. That board is a commercial entity. It is something that deals with the commerce, the business of the Special Economic Zone. It is the board that will make that entity show profit in the end. So it should be equated to the board of a company or a public entity, a public business, a government business enterprise. Now, if we look at government business enterprises or public entities, in the PFMA and the National Treasury Regulations, there are no requirements for these boards of these of the board of these entities to have prescribed compositions or terms of terms of office. And the big reason, in my opinion, I might be incorrect, but in my opinion, it would be because they are commercial in nature. So it's a total different ballgame almost than when you have an advisory board in place. So I would be very careful to include something in this bill that is not required of other public entities and other government business enterprises. Then C, see the functions of the Special Economic Zone Board. Now, if we look at the bill, first of all, Clause 25.6 sets out the first function. Special Economic Zone Board must manage that Special Economic Zone entity in accordance with, and then there's a couple of acts that are listed in respect of which level of government that entity falls, if it is national in terms of the PSMA, if it is municipal system, if it is a public-private partnership in terms of treasury regulations, Municipal Finance Management Act. So all of those levels are brought into play there, and all of those acts will be part of determining the function of that board. Furthermore, Clause 26 requires the Special Economic Zone Board to develop and implement a strategic plan for that entity. 27, the Special Economic Zone Board must, at least 2 months before the end of the financial year, submit a business plan and financial plan, another function. Clause 28, the Economic Zone Board must keep full and proper record of financial affairs, must prepare financial statements, etc. So I would submit that the functions of this board is actually quite clearly set out in the bill itself. On the next page of the proposal, the Code of Good Conduct and Disclosure of Interest for the board, and again the same argument that I gave in respect of other public entities and other business enterprises. The Public Finance Management Act does regulate these entities. The National Treasury Regulation does provide certain aspects that they must comply with, and I would caution against putting more stringent requirements on these entities than what is required in the Treasury Regulation. In respect of the proposed paragraph E, as I've already read out to the committee, Clause 41 provides exactly the same. So that would be a duplication. The next aspect is on page 16, Section 38, again, in respect of regulation. Now, what we have in Clause 38, let's first understand what the clause is about. This is any person who intends to conduct a business in the Special Economic Zone must apply to the Economic Zone Board in the manner and form prescribed to locate the business in the Special Economic Zone. What we have here is that we are, in the interest of achieving the objects of this bill, we are interfering in a commercial transaction. That is what this bill is doing. The justification is that there is a reason for the zone to be set up. That reason is certain economic development, everything that the objects are set out. So we are already stepping into the arena of a transaction between the board and an investor. So I would again caution that we do not go too far here, because the approval of the application to locate a business, it's not a license, it is an approval to locate, and that approval is commercial in nature. And I would submit that there is enough competitive factors that will make the board of that Special Economic Zone not delay with that application. If they delay, they lose the investor. It's as simple as that. In the vein of an appeal, again, this is a commercial transaction, not an administrative transaction. So I would again caution against doing an appeal. If the zone does not approve an investor, there must be a very good reason for that, commercially speaking. Again, investor-wise, it is a matter of trying to attract investors, and would be totally against the objectives of the economic zone to simply reject a person. So I would very strongly caution against that. That in respect of Gauteng, if we go to the next one where there were amendments proposed, in respect of Limpopo, I will defer most of those proposed amendments to the department, because they relate more to policy aspects and I don't want to venture there. What I can say is that there is a proposal for certain clauses that include definitions within the clause, for those definitions to be extracted and inserted in Clause 1 of the bill, where all definitions are set out. Now, I need to ask members to bear with us lawyers. This is a drafting convention. Where a definition is only used in one clause in the bill, the drafting convention requires us to insert that definition in that clause only and not in the definitions clause. And all of those clauses where the definitions are actually included in the clause and not in clause one is because that word only appears in that one clause. So it's, I understand the proposal, but it is a drafting convention that we do subscribe to. Then, in respect of the Western, I think that was the Western Cape's one that I now, I think I now confused the two. I do apologize. So on the Western Cape, I will ask the trading industry justice speaker, that was the first one, and then the last aspect was the clauses that I explained. On Limpopo, if I can go there, Limpopo did not propose wording for amendments, but they proposed concepts. And if I can go through those, the first one is that all non-provinces should be represented on the advisory board. Now, I think that is maybe something just for trade also to speak to, but I'm sure that members of the committee have come across large and clumsy boards that do not perform because people can't get a quorum for a meeting and therefore they never meet and never take decisions. So we need to just be very careful. We need to also remember that the Intergovernmental Framework Relations Framework Act is still there. It's an act that applies. It also applies side by side with this bill once this bill should come into operation. And it is required by the Constitution that all spheres of government work together. It is cooperative government that we have in this country. So it is a requirement. Whether it is in this bill or not, whether the provinces are represented on the advisory board or not, there must be regular interaction. So although I understand the sentiment, I would caution against too large an advisory board that could make it dysfunctional. In relation to the second aspect that is proposed, is that investors must be monitored to make sure that they give back to communities, and this monitoring evaluation must be conducted continuously. That is not something that I would recommend that be included in the bill. It is very operational. And in fact, that is something that this committee, in my recommendation, should flag and follow up with the department when the department comes to report on the progress that is made in respect of special economic zones. The third proposal is in relation to support measures, specified time frames for the distribution of incentives, incentives for investors creating jobs for local people, beneficiation and skill transfer. Now, that is something that I suppose we can include in the bill, but we must just be cognizant that the targets of this country might change over time. And incentives work on a basis that is not just approved by trade. It must go through a number of departments before that final approval is actually obtained, finance being very instrumental in that. And, of course, the incentives themselves have to follow the economic policy of the department. So when we do bills, although bills aren't cast in stone, it's also not ideal that they be regularly amended. So if something is sufficiently set out, contained in policy and regulated on that level, it is not required that we put it in a bill. And on this aspect, I would recommend that this also be something that this committee flags. And when trade and industry comes and discusses with this committee what its incentives are doing and how they work, that the committee take them up on these kind of aspects. That is more the appropriate level, at an oversight level, where this should be addressed. In respect of establishing, the next point is in this, establishing in remote areas and existing business structures to be developed to become special economic zones. Again, I would recommend that this is something for oversight. It is something that the committee must flag and they take the department up. The bill in itself more sets up the framework to enable this program to work. So to insert very operational aspects does make a bill clumsy and less flexible. So we must just be cognizant of that. I think that the last proposal from Limpopo relates to traditional leaders forming part of the board and board members to have equal representation of women, youth, and people with disabilities. Now, first of all, on traditional leaders, the same argument as in relation to the nine provinces also apply here. We must be careful of having boards that are just so big that they can't operate. Furthermore, the advisory board, the whole setup of the board, if we look at who the proposed members are, and that is in clause 24, we see that, clause 7, one representative of the Department of Trade and Industry, one of South African Revenue Services, National Treasury, Public Enterprises, Transnet, Eskom, Industrial Development Corporation, people with experience in, representing organized business, labor, civil society, based on their knowledge and experience in special economic zones, five independent persons based on experience and expertise relevant to special economic zones. So we can see that the advisory board, that expertise focuses on economic development through special economic zones. And I think we must be very cautious if we widen the scope of what they must advise on. When it comes to the traditional aspects, if a special economic zone, there's an application for one to be on land that falls under traditional leaders, I would almost suggest that at that point in time, DTI needs to do separate consultation and not just rely on the advisory board and approach the National House of Traditional Leaders, because it affects something broader. And we must also keep in mind that this development is of the national economy. So it doesn't just affect one piece of land, if that is designated. It affects a broader economic policy. So again, I would caution against broadening the membership of the board. It is already a very big board with 15 members. It is already something that is going to have to be very carefully managed. In respect of equal representation of women, there is currently a bill before Parliament, the Women Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill, which addresses equal representation. So there is a bill that addresses it. It will, the manner in which it addresses, I submit that is the correct bill to address that, because it will not address it simply in connection with this board. It will address it nationwide in connection with all representative structures. Furthermore, because I have to point that out, should that bill not be enacted, I mean, well, it's not desirable if it's introduced will pass and be accepted by both houses. We have to accept that possibility as well. We still have the Constitution that says that we must, there's a right to equality, etc. So I do think that it's not necessary to specifically include that. There is something that is on its way. But in any event, if we look at Clause 7, Sub 5, Paragraph B, we see that this bill does, although it doesn't make it a requirement, it says, the Minister must strive to ensure that the composition of the advisory board is broadly representative with due regard to race, gender, regional representation, experience, and expertise. So there is some provision made for it, and I would admit that the bill that is on its way, I'm sure that it will be in some form, in some point in the next year or two, be an act to that regard, which is a more appropriate place for that to be. Jefferson, I think that is all the amendments. Thank you very much.
State Law Advisor.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, the MPs of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Norm Van Ninge from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, Chairperson. Unfortunately, my colleague, Ronwabi Simboko, who is dealing with the bill, is not here. He's busy with another bill Department of Justice. I received the documents now, the imposed from the provinces. So I was just looking at them, starting to read them. Whatever the department, because the department will answer, and then I will assist them on other matters and also on drafting. Thank you, Chairperson.
I don't know whether to say the state law advisor is occupied with more important bills than this one, but I reserve comment. The department, let's give you the two comments on these issues, and we also want to hear the legal side of it in what is
interested. Good morning, honourable members and good morning, Chairperson. My name is Nongweba Mashalaba. I'm currently the acting DDG for the division called Incentive Development and Administration with NDTI since our DDG resigned. We have listened to Charmaine's elaboration on the in response, and we fully agree with her. But I will ask Mr. Kaya Ngaka, who has been the leader in all the provincial hearings and in the bill, to clarify certain issues that have not been clarified when Charmaine was responding to some of the questions in the amendment resolution. Thank you, Jackson.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, thank you very much for the opportunity. As the acting DDG has alluded, we actually advocate fundamentally, actually reflected the position of the department in terms of our views and our response to the proposal or the mandates of the from the provinces. However, I will, without repeating what he has already said, I will add on areas pertaining to policy issues. And I think I will start with the Limpopo. Actually, our view, Honorable Chairperson, is that the bill is the framework. It provides the framework. And in that case, it will enable the program to run and to be operationalized. And if it's a framework, obviously there will be regulations, guidelines that will actually assist us both national and province and municipal levels to effectively implement the program. Having said so, if I look at the Limpopo one, I agree with Advocate in terms of representation of the nine provinces. It's the same view that is shared with the traditional leaders. To add on that, I would also say the provinces, because they will own these SEZs, and they will establish the SEZ boards. So that also gives them a leverage to be fully represented. And actually, they will establish their own SEZ, they will run with it, and they will go further and even write up strategic plans like how they are going to shape the SEZ. They will make direct inputs, and actually those inputs from them will be the ones that will actually advise and guide the advisory board at national level. So the provinces will be the ones who will actually directly make input and shape the SEZ. So they have a more prominent role than anyone else at national in terms of the SEZ and how this bill is designed. And in terms of the functions of the advisory board in clause 11, that one which talks about monitoring, the investors must be monitored in licenses. Again, this is more of an operational issue. In our policy statement, we've made those highlights to say the department will establish the monitoring and evaluation system that will actually monitor the functioning of the special economic zones. And this monitoring and evaluation system actually will be informed by the SEZ entities those entities that will be established by the licensees, by the provinces and municipalities. They are the ones that will work with our monitoring and evaluation system on a daily basis in terms of monitoring progress of these SSS. So those are parts of the systems that we put in place to operationalize the SSS. And in clause 21, support measures. Again, we cannot at the, because the bill is only a framework, we cannot specify and say for argument's sake there'll be a 10% tax incentive. Because if, for instance, in 3 years' time, our economic conditions change and compel us to adjust that 10% to 20%, we'll have to go back to come back to this house and amend the bill and take that whole process again. And understanding that the SSS by its nature needs quick decision processes and always provides certainty to investors. So those things, we left them because we want to provide for flexibility as well in terms of the law that is in front of us. And the same with the number 5, that is Roman figure number 5 under support measures. There must be incentives for investors who are creating jobs for local people. There's a, for instance, in our presentations to the provinces, we mentioned that so far there are achievements that are in place in preparation for the implementation of this SSZ program. One of them is the approval of certain incentives, including employment tax incentive. And that employment tax incentive is one of the ways that would be used to stimulate employment in the SSZ. And of course, it will make it easier or much cheaper for the employers or investors to employ a certain category of people. But we also feel that other incentives as well will lower the cost of production for the investors, and that will actually lead to expansion or what's called increase in activities in the SSS that will generate even more employment. So that one is our policy covers it quite well in terms of making SSS to be generators of employment in the country. And the same with beneficiation and skills transfer. Again, that one, is when we talk about support measures in the bill, it's not only about incentives, tax incentives, it's also about skills development strategies, it's about supplier development programs, and these are things that actually will form part of the requirements when before an SSZ is designated by the minister to look at the feasibility studies, to look at what are the strategies that will actually make sure that people are developed in terms of skills, small, medium enterprises. Hence, the bill is talking about, in its purpose, is talking about broadening participation. How are we going to make sure that our SMMEs participate fully in these main SSZ activities? And how are we going to make sure that we equip them? Because what is important as well is to equip them to be capable suppliers. And actually, by so doing, we want to make sure that in the medium to long term, we have medium and large enterprises emerging from our SMMEs, micro enterprises. So that is an intentional strategy going forward in terms of this. And of course, those are measures that I don't think it can be easy to legislate, because measures are also dynamic. We may find that there are other measures, that set of measures that will need to be introduced. Hence, we do those at policy level and also at operational level. And in terms of the designation of special economic zones, yes, a special economic zone can be designated anywhere in the country as long as there's a strong business case for that special economic zone to be established in that location. And actually, we must, Honorable Chair and this Honorable House, we must also take into consideration that there are many instruments, economic development tools, that can be used in conjunction with special economic zones to achieve our economic development objectives other than special economic zones. For instance, economic zones would be used in conjunction with other rural development strategies that will make sure that we stimulate economic activities in our rural areas and our urban areas. So in a way, an SSZ is part a part of a bigger picture in terms of economic development. And therefore, those zones, even if they are established in the rural area or near the rural area or in the urban areas, our special economic zones that we envisage are special economic zones that will actually create value chains, in other words, linkages with other industries, stimulate development of industries, backward and forward linkages. For instance, the suppliers, where the suppliers will come from, of course, will use SSS to encourage local content, localization as well, and that means a value chain along the lines. So in a way, an SSZ is much of a strategic tool that will stimulate these industrial activities in the areas, including the rural areas. And I will not repeat the traditional leader issue. It has been elaborated on already. And actually, we also take, for instance, traditional authorities. For instance, you talk about an SSZ in the rural area. Most of the land in the rural areas belongs to tribal authorities. And therefore, there are various models of ownership that one can think about when talking about SSS in the rural areas. It could be agreements in the ownership of the SSS alone. Like, for instance, a traditional authority may agree that, okay, we'll donate this land, provided this land will be converted into FET for this traditional authority. These are various models that actually the DTI can work with whoever wants to apply for that SSZ to make sure that there's an agreement. Representations in the SSZ board as well and so forth, so that people in those areas and chiefs fully participate in the SSZ activities. And when it comes to the Western Cape one, I think the proposed amendments in clause 36, subsection 2A, the word operator, I think if we look at the Special Economic Zone Board, the inclusion of the Special Economic Zones Board, but if you look at clause 36, subsection 3, it covers that, because it actually say the minister must inform the Special Economic Zones Board. So it's already covered. And clause 36.3 in line 11, 36.3.11. Yeah. Yeah. So in other words, both in 2 and 3 are covered in terms of the minister consulting them, informing them. So we think this, this proposal is already covered in the bill. Honourable Chair. And in terms of the recommendations, the first one is there is currently a great demand for scarce skills within the South African labour market. The employment, we talk about the employee tax incentive that actually doesn't cover the skilled people, highly skilled people. Our view is that actually if you are highly skilled, it is actually evidence. Right now, if you are highly skilled, you find that your incentive, that's why I find that highly skilled people move around a lot, is because they are attracted by high salaries. There's already an incentive of a high salary if you are highly skilled. So it is our view that when you talk about a high skilled category, being engineers and so forth, it's automatic. There's an attraction of big banks salaries. And we, in our view, we think to incentivize low income categories might work better, because those are the people who at the moment are actually negatively affected by high unemployment, and we think there's a need for policy intervention at that level to alleviate the high unemployment level. And the use of the single point and one-stop shop. Again, the use of the word a single point is also an expression to elaborate on one-stop shop, because the purpose of the one-stop shop is to create a single point of contact foreign investor. Hence, we find that we lose a single point and or one-stop shop. It's the emphasis that this one-stop shop is a single contact for investors. We don't want our SEZ investors to make applications, to lodge an application for a visa at Home Affairs and then go to SARS and then drive to municipality and all that. We want them to lodge all applications. If it's online, they do it online, a single point, and then receive their confirmations or their approvals within a predetermined time frame. So the way, that is the purpose of using WET, a single point, together with a one-stop shop. It's a matter of emphasis in that regard. Yes, I think if I've left out something, my colleagues will also come in. I think in all, Chair, we fully agree with Advocate Fandamere. It is actually the reflection of or the position of the department as well. And yeah, that's.
Through you, Chair, we also take note that we don't have written down responses, and we commit that you will submit them before end of business today, as requested.
I wanted us before even Johan comments, if he wants to, I wanted us to sort of drop these sort of proposed SEZ, and now in Zulu Natal it could be to be tripod. And what about Eastern Cape? Eastern Cape, where could that SEZ be? Let me check out the problem. Southern, would you know? Would you know? Just give me the name. Why?
Southern, Honorable Chair, is a smart city that is at Nazareth.
Yeah. Just name all the other provinces.
Okay. Eastern Cape, agro-processing, that is Wild Coast or Tambo region. Free State, agro-processing, Ijelo Putswa. Is it the
new name?
Yes. Gauteng, City of Johannesburg, that is Nazareth, ICT Hub. KZN, Etekwini, agro-processing, that is estimated for agro-processing, aviation, and electronics. And then Limpopo, Sekhukhune, PGMs, that is Platinum Group Metals, beneficiation. Limpopo, again, Embe, agro-processing, mineral processing, and trade hub. Mpumalanga, Ehlanzeni, agro-processing. Northern Cape, Siyanda. Solar corridor. Northwest, Bujanala, PGMs, that is again platinum group metals beneficiation. Western Cape, City of Cape Town, renewable energy. I think that one is Atlantis. Yeah. Yes.
I just wanted to confirm that because you talked of rural areas and all these areas that you're mentioning, the majority of them are urban areas. But in your attempt, I know what is it now. You know this is a start. But what I want us to run away from is when we talk and when people listen to us talking, we're saying these SEZ will help people in the rural areas. Whereas in actual fact, they are in urban areas. If I take the one in Kinshasa, Dubai Tripod, people that are doing agriculture in Dubadu and Mangozi, that is about 400 kilometers away. So these are the things that we are saying. That is why Honorable Sinclair was raising that not only here, but there. In future, this is a start. What we want to see is doing some things in the urban areas and in the rural areas where people are so that they don't have the burden of moving from the rural areas trying to go to town to do these things. And I want our speaking terms to be correct outside. We should be saying rural. It's not rural. This is a start, and we understand that we're still going to have more SEZ, but we've got to start somewhere, and this is where we're starting. Do you want to comment on that?
Yes, Honourable Chair. Yeah. In fact, I wanted to comment on this issue, and actually on the issue that was raised by Honourable Chair. Yes, I think right now we are doing feasibility studies and feasibility studies. And actually, these are concepts that were submitted by the provinces themselves through MINMEC, because there was a discussion where we said, okay, let's have a bigger picture. What are the provinces proposing? And there was a wide range of SEZs from each province. And then the agreement was that we need to start somewhere. Let's have one concept per province or so to start somewhere. And then the decision was that, okay, let us have feasibility studies that will actually confirm for that particular province the viability of SEZ. And you might find, Honourable Chair, this is also the experience that we have with feasibility studies, that I might think that this, this area is viable on agro-processing by my observation, but after the in-depth studies done through feasibility studies, you find that actually there's a wide range of sectors and linkages that can be created between this place and maybe Saldanha Bay. So this is what we'll see in terms of the outcomes of those feasibility studies. There might be proposals for a wide range of sectors, not only agro-processing or what you call ICT, but other things. So actually, it's quite correct, Chair, to say this is a starting point. Of course, there's a wide range of SEZs. I think I mentioned it. I'm not sure whether it was in KZN. That, in fact, the bill opens a space for national SEZ, that is government SEZ, national, provincial, and municipality. That is purely government SEZ, but it also opens a space for public-private partnerships in terms of owning an SEZ. So it doesn't prevent a province, if, for instance, you have one proposed SEZ, to come up with a second one, maybe a PPP one. And in fact, PPP SEZs, the studies across the globe show that they are the most successful SEZs, because in the private sector, where they put their money on the table, they have seen a big business opportunity, and they will make sure that it succeeds. But we say they must work in partnership with the government. In other words, the government in the end must be able to benefit through those arrangements of the PPPs. So there's that opportunity as well, that you can have this purely government-owned SEZ, but you can still have a PPP SEZ or more than one PPP SEZ in a province, and they can spread across the province. So these are opportunities that the bill is providing us. Thank you very much.
Anything you want to comment on, Johan? And honourable members, I'm sure Charmaine, I'll ask you after Johan to say these are the concrete proposed amendments from provinces, so that members decide on those. Johan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think in essence it has become superfluous for me to speak. There is a simple arrangement between me and Advocate Fonamana that we try to speak from the same mouth, so to speak, unless of course we find ourselves in disagreement, which now and then would happen. But Chair, here I am again this morning, and I'm seeking your permission. Please guide us. This does not emanate from any of the mandates that we've been discussing from the provinces. We, or the DDI, has been approached by SARS. What's in a single word there? But we have been approached by SARS asking us urgently to raise this single word in this honourable committee. Would you please allow me a very brief opportunity, Chair, just to do that. It should take no more than 2 minutes.
Your first minute starts now.
Thank you, Chair. Can we refer to the bill on page 11 of the bill? It is in line 45. And allow me very briefly to read it for purposes of the record. For purposes of the section, and there is the definition of free port, mean a duty-free area adjacent to a port of entry where imported goods may be unloaded for value-adding activities within the SEZ for storage, repackaging, or processing, subject to customs, and there is the word, import procedures. The word import restricts the customs procedures to be applicable here to only customs import procedures. Needless to say, allow me possibly just a quick example. If goods are being imported into a free port, as we have here per definition, then those goods will be subject to customs import procedures. But subsequent to being imported, they may be stored, they may be repackaged, or they may be processed in terms of this definition. So what happens subsequent to import no longer relates to the import as such, and therefore we have ordinary customs procedure applying domestically in that free port in respect of those import goods. So SARS is pleading, please, if the single word would remain in this bill, the ordinary customs procedures that apply subsequent to import in respect of the storage, the packaging and processing will not be applicable in respect of those imported goods and therefore will curtail severely the application of their procedures. The request is simply this, Chair. May that single word please be omitted from the text of this law.
So for me to get you correct, nice and clear and loud, the word import.
Simply the omission of the word import, so that it would read customs procedures as opposed to customs import procedures.
Okay, thank you, my learned friend. Charmaine, welcome to you. So members will also consider this omission. Charmaine, gently propose amendments.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't have something that takes them clause by clause, so if I can rather go province by province, perhaps to start with the most recent proposal from trade industry itself in relation to clause 24 on page 11 in line 48 to omit the word import. That's the first amendment proposed. Then from the provinces, specific proposals made for amendments. So I will not look at general recommendations for consideration. I will only look at specific proposed amendments. I will start with the Gauteng provincial legislature. The first proposal is on clause 25, page 12, after line 32, to insert a subsection 7, which will deal with regulations. That minister must make regulations regarding the composition of the Special Economic Zone Board, the term of office of the Special Economic Zone Board, and the functions of the Special Economic Zone Board, code of good conduct and disclosure of interest for the Special Economic Zone Board, and any other matter which in terms of the Act is required for the proper implementation of or administration of this Act. That is the second proposed amendment. The third proposed amendment is also from the Gauteng Provincial Legislature. On clause 38, page 16, after line 47, to insert a subsection 4, again dealing with regulations. The Minister must make regulations regarding A, the prescribed time periods applicable for the Special Economic Zone Board to decide on the approval or disapproval of a license of an application to locate a business within the Special Economic Zone, and B, the practice and procedure to govern appeals brought against the decisions of a Special Economic Zone Board. That is the third proposal. The next proposal is from Limpopo Province, and the proposals made did not contain wording, they relate to concepts, and if accepted, we will then have to look at proposed drafts for this. So the fourth proposal is that in relation to clause 7, that all 9 provinces should be represented on the advisory board. The fifth proposal relates to clause 11, and there are 2 aspects to it. First of all, that there must be monitoring of licensees or investors to ensure that they give back to communities where the SEZs are located, and then that such monitoring and evaluation must be conducted continuously. A proposed amendment 6 relates to support measures in clause 21, and there are 3 aspects. That there must be specified time frames for distribution of incentives after an application has been submitted. That there must also be incentives for investors who are creating jobs for local people. And lastly, that there should be a beneficiation and skills transfer plan. The 7th amendment relates to clause 24, namely that the SEZs must also be established in remote rural areas and that existing business structures and economically active areas must be developed to become SEZs. The 8th proposed amendment is in relation to the governance and management of special economic zones in clause 25, namely that traditional leaders must form part of the SEZ board, especially in areas that will be designated as special economic zones which fall under traditional leaders, and that board membership must have equal representation of women, youth, and people with disabilities. The next proposed amendment is then from the Western Cape, and the first proposal is that in clause 36, that in line 7, after the word operator, the word and special economic zone board is inserted, and the 10th proposed amendment is in clause 36 again, in line 11, after the second the, to insert the word operator and the. Under recommendations, there weren't specific wording proposed, but the first proposal relates to, so the 11th proposal for an amendment relates to the bill should allow for greater intervention to equip individuals with high-level skills. The 12th proposed amendment is that the words single point and one-stop shop not both be used, but only one of these two terms. And then the 13th, and according to what I have, the last proposed amendment, that the concepts that are defined in clauses 4, 13, and 24 rather be defined within clause 1. Thank you, Chair.
I thought you'd go further and advise us and say on the first clause there could be no problem for us if we take a decision. Yeah, there's a challenge and so on. But to start with the first one, or the import, members, what do you say in that? We omit that or we don't omit that? Did you say something about the Eastern Cape, Charmaine?
Gee, the Eastern Cape proposals weren't given in the format of recommended amendments. That's why I said I'm not going to, because I'm not sure what exactly the proposals are. It appeared to me to be more in respect of implementation. So if I've missed something there, perhaps it can just be highlighted.
You mentioned there was rewording of clause 31. Page 7. Page 7, just at the bottom, clause 31. But while still looking at that, honourable members, we have heard about 13 clauses that are proposed for amendments. Honourable Ngoni.
Chairperson, I'd like to meet the legal representative for me to report to the support you like to those things to be go through customs, is normal. Otherwise, you might find ourselves now people importing drugs and stuff like that.
There's a proposal, Ms. Alexander. Honorable Adams, second. Okay, we've done the clause. Charmaine, how it comes to clause by clause, we want to finalize.
Let's do this thing. So the first proposed amendment then related to import.
Well done.
My advice would be that is accepted.
Well,
the second proposed amendment is from Gauteng. The second proposed amendment is in relation to clause 25 to insert regulations. My recommendation would be that this is sufficiently provided for either in the bill itself or in other regulation, and I would recommend that this amendment not be affected. Jeff, do you want to stop off?
Yeah, we want to do like that so that we finish. There's the advice. What do members say on that clause? I will take it from her. Dean Chairperson?
Yes, Chair. No, we're partially covered by the suggestion by the advocate. However, our question is how then that it can be that there's a process where, if I may term it, cut lunch, no start, no end of any term of office and so on and so on. But if these issues are clearly spelled out somewhere in the bill, it gives us a bit of a comfort. However, that can be cut lunch. What kind of people serving in a board forever and ever, amen? Without them being their term of office or their mandate being renewed and so on and so on. Whatever these issues, Chair, precisely because they'll be dealing specifically with the operation, like clearly as articulated by the advocate, the operation of the SEZ at that specific area. The operation entails a number of issues, to name the few, like the leasing and so on and so on. So there will be a number of issues that talk to procurement, blah, 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 security management of the area and so on and so on. So you can't have people sitting there forever. It will create a lot of problems. But if that issue is well spelled out somewhere in the bill, it gives us a bit of a comfort.
Is it covered in the bill?
Chairperson, the functions are definitely covered within the bill, but composition and term of office as well as code of conduct and disclosure of interest, that is covered in other legislation. The Public Finance Management Act is applicable. Depending on which sphere the entity falls, it will be the Public Finance Management Act is applicable or the Local Government Municipal Finance Management Act that will govern those issues. So there are the corporate governance aspects thereof. And then, of course, there are your other instruments, your non-legal instruments in the sense of non-legislative, such as the King Report and so on, which talks to governance.
But maybe Gauteng would be saying, not unless is that is spelled out, it is clear that it is covered here, so we won't cover it. Because once you leave it open, really, you give the space for any form of challenge. And in view of the fact that we're looking for uniformity, even in the board, you can't have an SAA board, this thing is covered, water utility, this thing is covered, but here there is nothing. So there won't be any uniformity. I think Gauteng has got a point that if we don't specify, have an amendment specifying the term of office, we must at least say this is covered by EFMA or whatever.
Chair, it is not necessary to spell out that the EFMA applies, although the bill does indicate that the entity must be managed in terms of the PFMA or the local government MFMA. So that is included in the bill. That incorporation of those acts is included in the bill.
Special delegate, Mr. Nkhay.
Thank you, Chair. In fact, Chair, the point of the matter is that the PFMA does not pronounce itself on some of the questions raised. The PFMA deals with matters of government and defines boards as accounting authorities of public entities, and it comes there. It does not talk about the term of office. Terms of office are decided separately.
outside the province, and therefore this assertion is not correct itself.
Yes, from the legal state law advisor.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let's look at the regulations, how they read, and then I will come with expansion. It says, Chair, the minister may, after consultation with the advisory board, make regulations regarding any matter which in terms of this act is required or permitted to be prescribed. If the minister wants all these matters to be on the regulations, then he can do those regulations. If what the Gauteng province require, the composition of the special economic zone, that any, when the regulations are being drafted, they will look at what is the principal act says, because the regulations cannot be drafted, the department cannot draft the regulations whereby the principal act does not talk to them. So if that any covered everything that it needs to be regulated. So if the minister wants to regulate the special economic, the composition of the special economic zone, then those regulations will come in, and then it will regulate, it will be clear, everything will be clear. But unless maybe the department can say something else, and then if maybe the portfolio committee wants those things to be spelled out in the bill, then I will talk with the department and we'll see what we can do. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, I'm coming to Chief Honourable Sinclair. These are members of the Select Committee.
I must say I'm concerned when I listen to this remarks. Forget about the one of us having the wrong identity. This is a Select Committee. It's a different committee from the NA. But what is of great concern to me is that the legal advisors say they will speak to this partner and then deal with it. Can't happen. We must deal with it now. We're now finalizing this. So there's no time to speak outside this meeting. Once we accept it, then the specific process will follow.
Yeah, Charmaine, I want us to deal also with the specific issue of term of office, because that is simple and straightforward.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think there might just be a misunderstanding with my last comment. When I briefed committee initially on each of these aspects, I indicated that the composition of the board and the term of office, as well as the code of good conduct, all of those aspects are dealt with to some extent outside. And if we look at what the Special Economic Zone Board is, it is a commercial entity. It runs the business of the Special Economic Zone. So the comparison that must be drawn is with other public entities, other business enterprises. And if we look at Treasury regulations, if we look at the BSMA, there is no specific requirement there. They do not constrict through the BSMA or the Treasury regulations in relation to term of office or composition. Those aspects are part of corporate governance and is counted in your other instruments, such as the King Report. So what I said was that I would caution against applying criteria or requirements to this entity that differs from others. But it's simply a caution because of that. So if a committee feels that they would like to insert that, then there is no legal problem to insert that. From my side, I would say that there is sufficient provision to give the necessary guidance to each special economic zone so that this does not have to be spelled out in the bill. But it does not mean that there would be a problem if it is spelled out in the bill.
Chair, I thought maybe we would have another opinion from maybe presiding officers about the correct interpretation of what is being explained, because it's too technical. It's the manner in which I understood her to be saying is that we are saying the same thing, it's just that it's more about what we want to insert, even though it doesn't change what is currently there. Mm-hmm. And if that is the case, then I don't see why we are arguing about it, because it's like we're saying the same thing. So that is why I thought maybe somebody from the legal fund was going to get in and assist us so that we can have the correct understanding of what is being presented to us here, instead of just assuming that we are getting what is being presented, yet to missing something that is very important. That's my input.
Yeah,
Honourable
Mwone.
Yes,
Chairperson, let me say that I have the soft spot for the provinces, because they say it's not like India in the principal right. I take this SEZ being the principal right on SEZ, because it's only another right on SEZ. So I actually share the sympathy when they say it's not mentioned here. However, the fact that she says that it's a commercial port is different from the any other port. Is then possible that you can, in the explanations, perhaps you spell out it's a special, it's a commercial port. It's not like other ports, so that there's a difference. Even now, it's not spelled out there about the chief office, but you know that it's a commercial port and it won't apply like in other ports to cover the provinces.
You know, if you look into this bill, they have said who sent there. They said this one, one from here. They've gone that far. The only thing that is left, and then they've said five from certain group, the only thing that is left is for how long will these people serve? You know, that is the point. You know, it's just a normal board and so on, and if you go to court, and then they say you ought to have known that this this is what was meant. Honourable Adams.
I could be off the rail of the track, but my understanding of the special economic zone board, it is the licensee must appoint such a board. If I'm correct, in clause 25. And it gives various licenses. This is municipal, if it's in the municipality, it must deal with as in the Municipal Systems Act. If it's the national government or provincial government, it's under the Public Finance Management Act. Now, I think that the minister, to be honest, can't like that in terms of a municipality to say that for 5 years. The guidelines is with the advisory board is for 5 years. So I would think that the guidelines of the municipality or the licensee of certain economic zone will then determine in terms of what systems that access in terms of the municipal and in terms of the PFMA, what that access, because a board can't be forever. It has to have a timeline. So I would suggest that we leave it as is and let that discretion be over to the licensee as the board thinks it should be. Thanks.
I hear that, Honourable Adams, but I think here we're dealing with the national board, because they talk of the composition, not about local, not about the one that will be represented by the department,
provincial.
So the department will be represented in each province. Charmaine?
I think maybe that is where the confusion comes in. There are two boards in this bill. And that's why I was trying to explain that this one that we're talking about in this clause is the commercial one. It deals on a very small level with a specific economic zone. The national board, that one is dealt with in clause 7. That is the one that has the department, the specialists, and for that board, there is a term of office, there is a how they must be set out. So I think that's why I try to make the distinction. Maybe I did not express myself clearly enough. There is one board, an advisory board. That board is national. That board will advise the department. For that board, we have a clear composition in clause 7, clear terms of office. We have disqualification, vacation of office, functions. All of that is set out. But what we're talking about in clause 25 is we are now looking at the company. This is a company that is going to run the SEZ in East London, or the company that will run the SEZ in Upington. That company must have a board. That board is governed by, if it's an entity is established at a national level by or a provincial level, by the PFMA. If that entity is established by a municipality, it is governed by the Municipal Finance Act. So that is the distinction that we must make, and that was why I was saying there's sufficient guidance. There's a number of documents that apply to all public entities, to all government business enterprises that do speak to governance. It speaks to the succession planning that must be in place to ensure that your board is not there the whole time. So that is where that provision is made at that level, because it's a different type of board from the national one that is in Clause 7. So when we look at what the Special Economic Zone Board itself does, that is where Gauteng is proposing the amendment. So it is on the company level. I call it commercial to try and distinguish that this one will be working with finance and the strategic plan of that economic zone. There is the Clause 7 Advisory Board. That board will deal with licensing and permits, the bill, whether the program is performing. It's a total different entity from what we have in Clause 25. But Chairperson, the bill is in England. We have already accepted one amendment. We are sort of done. Now, isn't it? This bill is going back. There's no other way because we've accepted one amendment. If members will feel more comfortable to say that there must be regulations made, and I think we'll have to be very careful when we think of the wording for it, because as the member indicated, we must be careful that the minister doesn't make regulations for a municipal entity. We'll have to just be very careful how we word that. We can put it in. I do think it is sufficiently covered. I don't think that there will be any harm if this amendment is not done. I do feel that it is sufficiently covered. But if the members want that extra certainty, we can put it in. We'll just have to be carefully thinking about how to craft the wording.
Gauteng.
My pleasure. That's precisely where our contention is with the board that will run the entity, which is in this case, the Special Economic Zone. Our argument is that it can't be open-ended. Hence, we're saying, can the minister regulate? And I thought Mpumalanga was taking us forward, and given also the advice by the advocate, that it's not a matter of life and death. We can insert it. There's no problem. So that gives us comfort resulting, if that can be inserted. Unlike assuming, given the articulation that was also taken by Eastern Cape, because we'll be forced in this meeting to get into the PFMA and look at a specific whether that matter is covered in the PFMA. So I don't want that to happen in this meeting. So for us to be clear, not to be ambiguous, I guess, it's appropriate that we insert it. There's no harm. Also, that's advice that there's no harm. Yes, sir.
So, Honorable Young, this is bringing the mic next to him. You know, a little bit of a confusion. You know, I'm so literate that I tend to confuse the issue of, one, this is a commercial section which would be just doing business, which I would make it as a sort of a public entity. And then at the same time, say, the PFMA would kick in. That is where I think I would need clarity, because doing business privately there, and then would say would rely on the PFMA. Is it honorable now, Honorable, before your comment, Shannon?
Chairperson, we understand in Section 7 that is the advisory board that for the term of 5 years will be published and supplement. But what the housing is concerned about is the board that will be established at the municipal level and the provincial level, where the state of the order, the term of office is not stated. of which we think, or they think that they think covered in the FMA or the PFMA. So that's why they work out, so that if we can require this term of office in this bill, section 25, that the term of office shall be so many years, then it clarifies, there's no ambiguity. That's how they propose. So as I said, that by the saying there won't be any problem, but at least it causes us, of which I are clear something that let's do that so that they are covered. There's no ambiguity in that.
I hear what they say, Chair, and I'm not disagreeing, but my point is, why should we do extra work where it is already covered? What for argument's sake if it's public-private partnership? Had the minister then regulate, we are complaining that we don't want a top-down approach. Now, to put this in, it's exactly a top-down approach. We won't allow provinces to do their thing. We won't allow municipalities to do the thing. We won't allow public-private or public enterprises. Because all three of that spheres are regulated already. One is through the PFMA, one is through the Municipal Systems Act, and the other one is through the National Treasury Act. They are all three of them are regulated. So are we now saying that we're going to force a top-down approach and we're not going to give provinces the leeway, all municipalities the leeway, to do the thing? We should be careful to say that we then take all powers up to the minister, and the provincial MEC will not be able to do his or her thing, as well as the MMC or the mayor at the municipality. I'm just cautious about that.
Mr. Jade, then Northern Jade.
Sir, I've always understood that South Africa is a unitary state, not a federal arrangement, although it has some features of federalism, but it remains a unitary state. And that this debate about top-down approach is right here, not there. The issue here, if the matter of the term of office is covered in the PFMA, we must be told which clause in the PFMA that talks about timelines for boards. Because the PFMA is a mechanism that's used to ensure that there is accountability in the public service, both in terms of governance and management of public funds. As such, that the proposal by something is that there should be a term of office for boards. And there is no legal opinion presented before the House against that. Then what are we debating, Chair? Thank you.
Honorable Nyambi. Sorry. Honorable Sinclair. It's only that I said nothing to you. I know it's okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think we mustn't complicate this matter too much, because there's very, very distinct constitutional prescripts that already guides this debate. The one reality is that under the constitutional principles of our constitution, is the division of powers, where you've got very distinct powers for national, provinces, and local. And if you look at the way that it's reflected there in paragraph 25, then it refers specifically to that. But we must also have a change in the thinking. Remember, there's a lot of possibilities about how do you establish a special economic zone. And I think part of the problem of our thinking is that after the explanation from the gentleman behind the pillar, I can't see him, he's a voice in the dark here, but it tends to create the perception that it's only the minister that can establish it, and it's not true. Even as we speak now, you know about this one in the Northern Cape, this one there, this is a wish list as we speak at the moment. The fact of the matter is there's a lot of proposals in terms of how we can establish it. But it must operate in regulated fashion. And that is the difficulty. It seems that Gauteng wants to distinct time frame linked to that. But I honestly believe it's already encapsulated in the legislation, in the broader context of how we deal with courts, in the PFMA, BBB, so.
Thanks, Chair. I'm a little bit tempted not to get into details of what I wanted to read, maybe for the first time as we're about to conclude 2013, to agree with my capitalist friend with a socialist conscience next to me. my unfortunate situation is that we have had these briefings to provinces and of course mandates. And they're not a part of housing. They raised a particular matter. And that matter was clarified. But instead of just focusing on that matter that had been raised by housing so that all of us can have that common understanding, we decided to broaden it and make it not what they are raising. That is why earlier on, Chair, I said, from the explanation given to us, I don't see much of a contradiction on what is currently contained on the bill in front of us, except that they wanted to get the comfort that the matter that they are raising, that the bill is important, how do they make sure that it's not something that is being left out? And in trying to clarify what they are raising, we're raising a number of issues that end up creating confusion. So that is why I'm still appealing to you, Chair, that if you allow somebody to reconcile what is being raised by Gauteng in relation to what my head is currently in front of us, we're going to conclude. That is why I'm tempted to say, my friend next to me is correct, not necessarily that what is being raised by Gauteng is wrong, but it has been correctly captured in what is currently in the bill in front of us, with my little understanding of these legal jargons. That's my submission, Jefferson.
Charmaine, I want us to close this and move forward. It's quite clear. You know, I can feel that even Gauteng is also on the same level as what another Miyambi is saying. I can see that. But another unfortunate situation that we face is that we still have another matter, another bill that we have to deal with. And I'll urge with the members. It's good. For us, it's good to engage and argue, but we want to come up with something concrete that won't have a dent. For the last time, I want to get it clear that we really, as I listen to people talking, that we would have an opportunity, even if it's not there, that we revisit this issue. If it has gone through, we are the community that can deal with it. If there is a strong argument that in some form it is covered in one way or the other, how then are you in agreement?
I thought the advocate would start first, Chair.
No, I want the advocate to speak on this point.
No, it's fine, Chair. I agree with you. But also using or borrowing the words from the advocate, cautioning that let's not assume. Because there are a lot of assumptions here. As long as those issues are specifically clearly defined somewhere, they give us comfort. But to assume then we have a problem.
Yeah, Honourable Miyambi will interpret this. Ukuhlehla kwenqama kusuke kungeyokuthatha amandla. Kusuke ingahlulwanga. Shamina, I want us to move on with further amendments. I don't want to time you now that we deal with these things, we have to deal with the other people.
Thank you, Chairperson. I need to ask just an indulgence just to point one thing out that I have not pointed out to members on this specific issue. It was something that I realized I'm missing, and that's why I'm sort of walking around a point. When a public entity or a business government business enterprise is established, it's done in terms of legislation. And it's at that point that terms and conditions of employment and functions and those things are inserted. So that there's a bill that will come. But there's also public-private enterprise, public-private partnerships. So what I would suggest is that between the drafting team, Satchel, Bob, myself, DDI, we need to give something to this committee before the end of business today anyway, that we make a proposal to compromise so that we don't interfere in spheres and the competencies of spheres, but that we provide for some form of regulation that talks to perhaps principles that will apply to all of these entities. I think that that may be something where we can find middle ground.
Agreed. Let's go to the next proposed amendment.
Thank you, Chairman. The next proposed amendment is also from Gauteng, and that relates to regulations on Clause 38. Again, regulations that would govern the location of economic zone enterprise. My comments to this committee on that aspect was that this relationship between the Special Economic Zone Board and the enterprise is not an administrative relationship, it's a commercial relationship. And I would definitely caution against interference there, and I would definitely be cautioning very severely against an appeal mechanism being put in place, because it's not an administrative decision. It's a commercial one, it's in relation to investment, it's in relation to the operations of that board. So on the third proposal relating to Clause 38, I would recommend that this is something that will be dealt with through competitive factors that will make this economic zone either succeed or not succeed. So if they delay with applications, they're going to not get investors. If they and the same in respect of the appeal, this is not administrative, I would caution against that.
Honourable members, it's a yellow light. Caution. You don't have to get the as per the condition.
Yeah, we've got a picture.
Holly?
Thanks, Chair. I think we're talking across each other with the advocate. And Chalwat raised in section 38.8 is about the time period of when is the license get approved or disapproved, not the exact location. We're raising this given our objectives as committees, as departments, about our willingness to assist investors in terms of the turnaround time for an investor to apply. Probably how long would that process take for the investor to be approved to be part and parcel of that economic zone. That's the point that we're raising, 1.8. Given that sometimes this process takes long, Chair. For example, in provinces we have EIA processes, in municipalities, until the investor gets said, no, these people are serious, let me go look at other places. So that's where I'm going to put my business. I can't be waiting for such a long period for them to approve or process my, that's the point that choice is.
So how do you like to see?
Yes, a similar time frame,
is it possible?
Ten out of time.
Is it possible? Taking into account EIAs and all those things, because it would not be in the power and within the jurisdiction.
But isn't it that the whole process of us establishing special economic zones is to precisely deal with that problem, part of it. That is to deal with that problem.
And I would think that's why we're raising this
issue. Chairperson, where I come from, they always say the people from Johannesburg are very clever, you know. And I tend to agree with it today, not always, but... But I think there's a way forward, and it deals with the issue that's also reflected there in paragraph 38, comply with other criteria that the minister might prescribe, you know. We will never forget the context of what we want to achieve. We want to get investment, and we want to make it easier for investors to invest in specific areas. In essence, what we want to do is we want to remove REPA. I think the plea from Gauteng is, let's create the framework, even by way of regulations of the minister, to make it easy. And the answer lies in what the advocate from the said to say. They will come up with certain suggestions to remove the uncertainty and hone it down to more specific approach what the minister must do. We can't deny it. The minister plays a fundamental role in the way that this whole legislation is going to roll out. And I think it undercovers, it will be undercovered by the issue of being more prescriptive, if you like, in terms of what we want to see in the regulation.
We're opening the doors and answer. If I can go back to page 5, section 5, special economic policy. It says here the minister may determine, shouldn't we then put this of Gauteng on section 5? The minister may determine policy for the designation, promotion, development, operation, and management of special economic zones after consultation with the advisory boards and may, when necessary, review such policy. Shouldn't this then go under there? I'm just asking, putting the question.
Are we on the same page, Shami?
I think again there are two different things that we are looking at here, and I think we might be confusing them. In Clause 38, what we're dealing with is the specific investor applying to the special economic zone entity that is created for that economic zone to locate there. In other words, if a special economic zone is dedicated to motor manufacturing, and I as a jeweler come and I say, but I would really like to settle in this special economic zone of yours, and here is my application. That is the application that we're talking about. We're not talking about the environmental impact assessment. We're not talking about any other departments that might give permission. This is the simple application of, can I come and establish my business in your economic zone? In other words, do I comply with all the criteria that the minister has set for this economic zone? If we're looking at environmental impact assessments, things about if I have specialists that will come from Germany because they can operate this machine, and then I'm looking at skills transfer to local people so that they can operate this machine, and I need permits for them to come in, then we're talking about Clause 22. Clause 22, even though the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act is already out there, Clause 22 specifically makes provision for implementation protocols. That is on page 10 of the bill. It says this implementation protocol may deal with implementation operation of a one-stop shop or any other matter requiring the coordination of the functions of organs of state that may be appropriate or required for the proper regulation and development of special economic zones. That is where that aspect will be dealt with, because the problem for the investor is not the application, because this application is not a license. It is not a permit that's given. It is simply, I want you locating your special economic zone. And do I comply with the conditions that on the economic zone license C, if it is on that license, do I comply with that? It's not about whether I am complying with environmental impact assessment and things like that. That is not within the control of the Special Economic Zone Board or the entity at all. They have no control over that. That is something that the minister must deal with. And the way that the minister must deal with is with specifically made provision, because this bill foresees a lot of intergovernmental cooperation. Without intergovernmental cooperation, this bill cannot succeed. And that is why specifically provision was made in Clause 22 for the implementation protocols. So that is where that aspect should be covered.
Okay, there has been a proposal that we should not take this. Is there any support or counter on this proposal? Honourable Nguni wants to propose and support and second.
Yeah,
You want to say something? Oh, good.
No, Chair, I was just motivating my point.
No, no, it's all you need now, the second. And, Guni needs a second. So he's not getting a second. But we don't take this proposal. No, Holding.
Given that Father Nguni is afraid to say something, I won't speak because I've been dedicated to speak on this matter. Not in Cape. Was talking to exactly what I'm saying. I'm not opposing issues, Advocate Chen. We're not saying, for example, specifically in helping, talking about this message, that's ICT. Obviously, we're not going to locate automotive in the ICT. We're not talking about that. We're talking about another ICT, for example, LG, coming to helping to say, we are interested, we want to get into your space. The argument that we're in helping is better around time. How soon does the whole process of application for them to be given their things allocated into that business get processed? Because part of what we're doing is the same issues that we're trying to entice investors to make sure that our country is investor-friendly, that our process does their red tape, it's seamless, and so on and so on. That's what we're raising this whole thing. So we're not confusing issues.
I will only allow one person from the department to respond.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. If I understand you very well, Honourable Member, we are not talking about an entity that is outside ICT. We are talking about an ICT that is wanting to come to an already licensed SEZ. So that entity already is allowed by law. The operator can give a recommendation for that LG to operate without consulting the minister. The only circumstance is that if it does not comply with the licensing regulation that will approve by the minister, if it is outside ICT, if it's still within the ICT and complies with the operating license, there is no need to approach the minister. The operator, if you look at clause 3, it says the board may, after considering all the recommendations, approve the application of the business to locate within the zone with or without consent, because it is within the licensing guidelines. Unless it is outside what has been approved by the minister, then the operator will approach the minister. So the turnaround will depend on the board, that we have this investor once what up to come here within 2 months. Let's work it faster. We don't have a problem. The way I understand the way you put it. Unless it is not adhering to the licensing requirements, then you approach the minister who has approved the licensing operation.
Loud and clear.
Through Chair, I guess it's loud and clear, but the first is relative. The issue was we are raising, I don't want to labor the committee on discussing the secretive, but we discussed this thing in the NDA also. Fine, we agree with your assertion, my sister. The issue that we're raising is that period, that's what we're talking about, the period, how long will that first study? That's what we're raising. Because most of the investors give that period of considering. Look at what you think, prescribed time, the considering part, how long does it take? And if we don't have some threshold, that means we're running a risk of losing that investor.
Yeah, I think from there, that won't come in the bill. It will be in the board there, where things are happening, where they'll have these things. That something comes and there's such a thing at one time. So that will be business to them.
That's
fine,
Chair.
Okay. Charmaine,
honorable. I support
the Lumi's proposal. Okay. So we pass on that. Charmaine, the next one.
The next proposal is theme number 4. It's from Limpopo, where they requested, and I think perhaps we can do 4
and 8 together, or the first one, a 4, because it relates to the advisory board and who should be members of the advisory board. The first proposal, under the fourth proposal, I must remember the fourth one, is that all 9 provinces should be represented on the SSA advisory board, and the traditional leaders must also form part of this board. From my side, I've explained to members that we must be careful of a too big a board that makes it impossible to operate. And from trade and industry side, they've indicated that the provinces will actually play a very big role in that it will be mostly your provinces that will be licensees of SEZ. I think in addition, after having received that explanation, we must also be very aware of the fact that we might then start having a conflict of interest where a person is represented on the board but is also part of an actual SEZ. So I think there's a number of things that for me speaks against that. It seems that there is a very clear and important role for provinces to play in relation to this program and that there will be representation for them. In relation to the traditional leaders, as I said, when something actually relates to land that falls under traditional leaders, I would recommend that this is actually something for the whole house, the National House of Traditional Leaders or the Provincial House of Traditional Leaders. But I would actually bump it up. I would say consultation must be on all levels because it affects nationally. So my recommendation would be that this is not, that these amendments are not included in the bill. The advisory board focuses on SEZ expertise and that there is an opportunity for consultation in respect of the provinces and traditional leaders.
Definitely, if you accept this, I'll also have a proposal that you have traditional people with disabilities be on the board, if you accept this. What do members say on this proposal? Honourable Adam.
Sure, no, I agree with what you are saying, because then we will have to go into a wide range of people taking legal action that they are not being appointed on the board of discrimination and all that. I think we should grab that and leave, because it is quite clear that to become a member of the board, in terms of how that is set out in the bill, the minister must still invite applicants. So if a traditional leader or something from a province has done the application, are successful, the minister picks him or her to serve on the board, that will suffice. So I would say I propose that we leave this clause out.
Sinclair?
No, I support this.
Okay, next one, Shami.
This proposal then relates to monitoring and evaluation in relation to the function of the advisory board, also from Limpopo. My proposal here is that is something that is for oversight and not for inclusion in the bill.
Honourable members?
Agreed, Chair. I'm seconding, Chair.
Next on Charmaine, this one is not taken.
Thank you, Chairperson. The sixth proposal, also from Limpopo, is in relation to incentives, time frames, specific types of incentives, and again, my recommendation was that this is not something that is for inclusion, specific inclusion in the bill. Economic targets change, and therefore you need some flexibility in relation to incentives, but this is definitely something for oversight and for the committee to follow up with the department in relation to what is actually being done.
Honourable members, yeah, the proposed amendments. Recommendation is that it did not take them.
I'm saying let us not take them.
Okay. Charmaine.
Thank you, Chair. The seventh recommendation is also from Limpopo, and this relates to the location of special economic zones to be in rural areas and existing business structures to be developed to become SEZ. And again, my proposal or my recommendation was that this is not for inclusion in the bill. The bill sets a high-level framework there, but it is definitely something that is for oversight and that can be followed up on.
Honorable members, honorable items. But I was saying to them that the Ukhosi Khali is going to slaughter them. But I think I must also fall under that or to be slaughtered, because the bill makes provision, adequate provision of where economic zones are and how it can be. So we take away the onus of municipalities or public persons to have economic zone in a rural area or what. So I agree that we take this up.
I'm seconding what is being said by Honourable Adams. There's no argument about it. We know that the government is not biased, so then it's not an issue that we can even start to debate it.
Charmaine?
The next amendment from the last one, from proposed amendment from Limpopo, then deals with equal representation of women, youth and people with disabilities on the board. And as I've said, that there is provisionable that there must be consideration thereof, and there is also something coming that will actually address at a national level equality of representation. And I would suggest that that bill is a more appropriate vehicle to address equality.
And also there's the Employment Equity Act. Honourable Adams.
Also, Chair, there's the ANC policy of 50-50, so we take it out.
Did you say that was the last, or you said that was the last at one?
The last of them both, Chair.
Oh.
Then we go to the Western Cape, Chair. I would like to do amendments 9 and 10 together, because they relate to the same issue. In clause 36, what the requirement here is that this is where an operating permit is withdrawn or suspended. And what the Western Cape is proposing is that when an operating permit is suspended or withdrawn, both the operator and the Special Economic Zone Board must be consulted and notified. The explanation for this is more on a policy level, but my recommendation would be that this is not a requirement. It is something that was, due consideration was given to it. The concern with the operator permit lies with the operator. It will be the operator will have to explain why he or she is not performing, or if it's a company, I suppose that's the better word, if I don't put gender to a company. The company will have to explain why it is not complying. But it is necessary, of course, for the board to know when that operator permit is withdrawn, and that is why that notification has to go there. And of course, it goes without saying that the minister will notify the operator that the license is withdrawn, because it will be withdrawn. So it would be my recommendation that these are unnecessary amendments.
Honourable Mbuli.
Agreed.
Let's go and take it. Honourable Nyambi. Honourable Nguni has proposed that you don't take them.
I'm seconding Honourable Nguni.
Okay. No, you're coming from the Western Cape. You cannot propose.
Chair, we advertised them with departments, but they went and said that they haven't got clear answers and all that, they will think about something. So as normally, it was also done in a dark back room and then brought after Madam's convention. So.
Okay. Was that the last one?
We still have 40 clubs.
Okay.
The 11th proposal is the bill should allow for greater intervention to equip individuals with high-level skills. The recommendation is that it is not necessary to insert this in the bill. The bill does provide for incentives, measures to intervene, and all of those are covered under that.
Members?
Let's take it out, Chair.
Take it out. Honourable Nyambi.
I'm agreeing that we have to take it out, Chair.
Charmaine.
Thank you, Chairman. The 12th one is the interchangeable use of single point and one-stop shop, and I think it was explained again from a policy perspective that those are the terms that we use and that are used interchangeably. Again, the recommendation would be that it is not necessary to make them all be the same.
I'm agreeing with what they're presenting to us, Chair.
I'll second it, Chair. Thank you. The last one from the Western Cape, and then we just have one from the Eastern Cape left. So the last one from the Western Cape is in relation to the definitions that are in separate clauses, and as I've explained, I request members to bear with the legalities on this. It is a drafting convention that these definitions be included in the clauses where they are. So we would not recommend that this amendment is accepted.
Honourable members?
I agree. Let's take it out.
Proposal that is out.
Seconding, Chair.
Seconded. Are we going to the Eastern Cape now?
Yeah.
Okay.
The proposed amendment from the Eastern Cape relates to Clause 31. And Chair, all that actually is done is that the way Clause 31 reads at the moment is simply fleshed out. In the proposal from the Eastern Cape. There's no significant change. It is simply taking what is there. What we have there is that when an operator is appointed, the board, the economic zone board, so that the commercial entity, must follow a fair, equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective procurement process. And then, what it says that if the entity is a private partnership, public-private partnership, that entity does not have to appoint a separate operator. It can appoint itself as operator. So what the proposal from the Eastern Cape is simply to put it in a little bit more wordy manner, making it a little bit, the sentences longer, changing the sentence structure. So, Chair, in my opinion, Clause 31 reads quite clear. It does say what, I think what its intention to say, I think, is brought across quite clearly. I will not have an objection to taking what the Eastern Cape has said on board, but I do not see the need for it. The clause is clear. So my recommendation would be that that amendment is not included in the bill, that the bill remains as is.
Honourable members, Nyambi.
It's the issue of semantics. I agree. They are saying the same thing, but in a different version.
Okay, so proposed. Honorable Rooney.
Second it,
and the department has done that. We want to remind the department that we want those written responses today. I want us to take what you call a comfort break. I just call it a smoking break. That's for 5 minutes. Then we come back. The 5 minutes start now, right? Martin will be pulling people inside.
Until 1 o'clock.
Es como no hace.
No, that's not for me.
No, that's not for me.
I don't think I'll flourish in the industry. I don't think so.
We are sorry to detect the line of officers in their discussion. Metrology.
It's a lot of work.
Thanks for acceding to our request. We still don't take this thing to our provinces. Then after that, we will engage. That's for you to introduce it to the committee. Then we find it to different provinces.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. My name is Garth Strachan. I'm the Acting Deputy Director General Industrial Development. On our right is Chenge Zemane, the Chief Director of Technical Infrastructure, Stuart Christian from the NRCS, and Anna Marie Lutter from Technical Infrastructure as well. It's going to be a difficult call to make a presentation on a long subject in a short space of time, but Dr. Zemane will try his very best given your instructions. Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. The subject of today's discussion is legal metrology bill. Legal metrology to begin with deals with weight and measure systems that we know everything has to be weighed or measured for us to comply. So I'll just jump straight to the bill and go ahead and start with the bill. The contents of the presentation will talk about the legal infrastructure, which is the area of work that the legal metrology falls into. Then we'll discuss the current act, which is the Trade Metrology Act, and its shortcomings, and then why we are moving into legal metrology, and then introduce the bill. I'll try to go as quick as possible. As you are aware, the technical infrastructure is actually a system that allows an economy to set standards, mainly for industrial production and to test against those standards. So the technical infrastructure basically comprises of standards, quality assurance, metrology, which is the measurement system. So they are scientific, they are also legal systems, measurement systems, and accreditation. Because of globalization, there are increasing demands on countries to demonstrate that they have this technical capacity to guarantee that products originating in their territories are safe and are fit for purpose. So moving on, in terms of the department flagship progress, the Industrial Quality Action Plan, we use the concept of locking and lockout non-compliant products. The technical infrastructure, therefore, is required to meet the measurement requirements that are brought about by health, safety, and environmental considerations. And also, the technical infrastructure is required for us to, for especially the manufacturers, to be able to meet the requirements of making products in different regions of the world. So we know that if you, BMWs are being made in East London, they can import or get doors to fit into those cars from Germany, and they will fit because the measurements are done in the same uniform manner. So that is quite important. So for government, our role is that we should continue to make sure that we have the system and the resources that we go on. So the structure of the South African technical infrastructure is as shown in this slide, where we show that we start with the standards, and using the standards, we have the regulator that tells the standards to compile the right requirements for product changes. But it is important that this structure that we have is actually similar for different countries. I think what is also important in the slide is that we have four bodies that deal with this work. This one is critical for individual health, critical for the health of the economy, and it's critical for the health of the country. So this work cannot be done by one individual. It cannot be done by one body, because you need the check and balance. I think that's the message of this slide, that we need the check and balance. So moving on to technology, as I said, currently we have an act that deals with this work, and that act is the Trade Metrology Act. In terms of this act, what is important is that trade metrology is the administrative and technical procedures that are implemented to ensure that measurements are credible These are measurements that are related to fake transactions. So we have a few examples on the slide there about measurements that are related to fake transactions. Made meal can be bought in prepared packages, and the measurement, which is the important issue for us, if it has 10 kilograms, then it has 10 kilograms meal. The volume container, 300 milliliters, it must be 300 milliliters, and so forth. So moving on to the list, you know, this for South Africa, the weight and measure system started in 1903 in Johannesburg, since 1973 it has been housed in the Department of Trade and Industry, and then in 1991 the work was transferred to the South African Bureau of Standards, and in 2008 it was transferred again to the National Regulator for Compulsory Certification. And there is where it has been resides, and then the department that is dedicated to trade methodology, or what is going to be the government methodology. So in terms of the current act, there are a number of shortcomings. One of them is that the current act only deals with trade measurements. It does not cover other issues of measurements that are discovered. Moving on, because of the limitation with the current act, we are not amending the act, we are actually repealing the act, and we are replacing it with the Legal Metrology Act, which is, it adds, and it increases reform, it adds health, safety, and environmental issues, whereas before it was just trade measurement. So basically, Legal Metrology is a trade methodology plus, it's just an additional requirement. Why do we want to do that? Why do we want to move to Legal Metrology? The reason we want to move is that the technological developments over the past 40 years since the Act was promulgated has moved substantially. We see that we now move from rotary phones to cell phones, and the measurement requirements are different now. We have data measurement requirements that we didn't have before. The systems were analog, now they're digital systems. So we have to also make sure that we are appropriately covered. There's speed tracking by the transfer department, and we see that they use cameras to do so, and these all have to be covered by our regulations. So there's quite a number of examples of why we need to move to different systems of measurement, to move to legal methodology. I think the examples are really merely examples. But I think the most important point about the examples that we have here is that these measurements do take place currently. However, they are not covered. There is no, they don't receive the same kind of attention that trade measurements receive, because they don't have a focused coverage through regulation, and that's what we want to address. We want to make sure that these measurements are properly regulated, and that the measuring system will produce uniform, accurate results, which currently, in some cases, is not the case, because they're not covered. So you can find that the instruments that are used are not approved, and therefore, you are not sure of the results that sometimes you get. And of course, the measurement systems for the health space are very critical, and they are also not covered under trade methodology. So they have, that's why we need to have legal methodology. Internally, there's the body that's responsible for legal methodology, and we are members. It's responsible for making sure that the regulations in respect of legal metrology are uniform throughout the world. So this just shows again our relationship with our neighbors and other regions of the world. Coming on to the bill, the objectives of the bill is that we want to continue to promote fair trade, industrialization, and to protect public health and safety and environment. But the public health, safety and environment issues were not covered before, and I will make one picture of those are covered. The bill also provides for the continued implementation of metrology work through the National Regulator for Comparable Specification, where it is our currency. And we provide for market surveillance by a staff at the NRCS for legal metrology also. So the bill will apply to all metrology products and services in terms of trade, health, safety, and environment, as indicated. And what is regulated, of course, is the measuring instruments for these tables. The act will be administered by the regulators, as I said. I think what's also important is that in the bill, there's a schedule that shows that the regulator will now report directly to the Minister of Trade and Industry. Currently, the regulator reports through a board to the Minister of Trade and Industry. So the board level will be removed so that it's a direct reporting to the Minister. And that's in line with the government policy that regulators should be much more closely aligned to the department that they report to. The NRCS that will administer this bill have a number of offices and they also have plans that in the next 5 to 10 years they'll be moving into areas where they don't, that they currently serve from campaign, for example, Bofor, Northern Cape, Northwest, Malanga, and so forth. Now, the way this extension of scope will work is that there will be new regulations that the minister will have to bring into being. And in terms of the regulations, in terms of the regulations that will come in, there will be formal processes and procedures of introducing the regulations. So in areas that are not covered currently, what will be required then is that there will be a process of, there will be feasibility studies done before that area is regulated, impact assessment and consultation. And the regulations that will be used are going to be based on standards, the South African National Standards, the ANS, that are developed by the South African Bureau of Standards. In cases where there are no standards available, they will again have to be a defined promise for the minister to bring in a regulation. In the bill, again, all important manufacturers in terms of measuring equipment will have to register so that we know the market size, is covered and is not covered, so we can plan accordingly. And if there are fees to be paid, then we know who we must talk to. Because it's measuring instruments on the wall, the instruments have to be repaired now and then, but before they are used, they have to be verified. So the bill makes a provision that the minister will prescribe through a regulation to restrict those people who verify from repairing the instruments that they are verifying. So that the issue of referee and repair is done away with. But this will depend on the risk of the area that is being covered. So if an area that is being covered is not at risk, say a health area, for instance, maybe blood pressure measuring instrument, it will be important that the person who repairs the blood pressure measuring instrument is not the same person who verifies and says that the instrument is actually working correctly. Because the consequences if the person is not doesn't do it right are dire. So depending on the risk, the minister may prescribe that the person who verifies is not the same person as the person who repairs it. This just shows currently the people who do verification, the facilities that do verification, where they are located, how many are there. There are masks that are used on instruments that have been verified and pre-packed with, and we, in the bill now, just made provision that the CEO of the regulator will have to authorize such marks. In terms of the penalty for not abiding by the rules, there will be fines that can be imposed by a magistrate, and the fines are left to the discretion of the magistrate, and they will take into account, of course, the adjustment of fines. But depending on the contraventions, one can be jailed for up to 10 years. Financial implications of the bill. currently, the regulator is funded by the Department of Trade and Industry. The bill also makes provision for fees to be levied for services that the regulator will render to whoever. And this is in line with the current practice of the regulator. So the process that we followed so far is that we have started positively. We did a lot of consultations with a number of stakeholders, and then we also consulted with MEDLA. We took the bill through the MEDLA process, and the process of the portfolio committee for trade industry completed in October, and now in November there was a second reading debate in Parliament on the bill. So in conclusion, what we are doing with this work is that the current Act, the Conservation Methodology Act, it's 40 years old, and it has been overtaken by a number of developments in the country and in the world. We are replacing it with the legal methodology. The current governance structure of the regulator also is not in line with what government wants. So we are moving into much closer working relationship with government. The credibility of measurement are remaining as they are. So we want to just improve to make sure all measurements in South Africa are properly regulated. And we will also address the financial needs of the regulator. I think that's it, members. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Thanks very much for that and for that understanding. But we still have a lot of time with you on this bill. Honourable members, any comment that you want to make? But before that, I want to say to you, you need to avail yourself when you do briefings to provinces. So all nine of them will be deployed. And all four of you will come to KwaZulu-Natal, maybe, I'm sure. But the Office of the Secretary here will give you dates so that you avail yourself. Maybe members will be there when brief. That will starting January next year, 29th, to do these briefings in the provinces.
Chair, I've just got two questions of clarity. The first one is, I see that the bill has been tagged as 76, and the argument leans on the fact that it's got Schedule 4 competencies. I'm not so 100% convinced that must be like that. Yeah, and then the other question of clarity is the issue that there's international conventions that was referred to by the presenters, and it seems that there's not general consensus worldwide. There's some that's in and some that's out. Now, South Africa operates in a great manner, quite often in developing countries. What is the impact on that? One would know that there's international bodies that will manage this, but it seems that here there's some confusion and so on. And with your permission, Chair, the third issue is that there was talk that this specific function will move to science and technology. What is the situation with that at some stage? I see the officials around, they're not aware of it, but my best recollection, there was talk. You must correct me, but I think I'm right when I say that. Thank you.
Yeah, on that point, I know even this committee in the last parliament raised it, the move of this unit to science and technology, because this is too technical. There was this feeling in the last parliament that, you know, it doesn't feel on trade. It doesn't fit on trade. But then so we are correct in saying at a certain stage there was some discussion that this would better serve on science and technology. It's too technical. Talking about these measurements and all these things. Just 6 years and 7 to members. But then your first question was the tagging, not sales in tech 76. That's why we'll do the normal session. The section 76, it has got impact on provinces, on all these things. So it was tech 76. So you can respond on the...
Thanks, Chairperson. As far as we know, and we obviously report to the minister, the only move was the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, which was in fact moved to the Department of Science and Technology. By the way, there are many engineers in SABS, NRCS, SANAS, and our technical infrastructure institutions, as well as in the DTI. So I think it might be a mistake, with respect, Honourable Chair, to suggest that there isn't very significant scientific and technical capacity in the DTI and the technical infrastructure institutions. And on that note, I'll ask Stuart just to respond to the question in relation to the unanimity with other global institutions and the implications of that for matters of trade.
Just before you do that, just to clarify that the issue of it being too scientific and technical refers to members not being in the same level as with you. They're too scientific and too technical. So that was the issue, not that within the system.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Stuart Carstens. I'm from the country, the director of trade metrology. So maybe I can give a little bit of light. I think before I head on to the question, I think we need to also understand that measurement is trade. Trade cannot operate if it doesn't measure. So to say we must go to the scientific because we don't understand, I think we clearly belong in the trade domain because that is what we're there for. So maybe just to add, currently the international organization of which I'm a member was established with a couple of main purposes, and one of them is then the development of recommendations which can serve as ideal regulations, which would then have a certain amount of harmonization throughout the world. You'll see that at the moment, if you look at the figures, they don't show it clearly on this slide, but currently there are more developing country members of the international body than there are developed members. And one of the other objectives of this organization was to assist with the dissemination of meteorological information and systems and assisting economies. And in this case, clearly developing economies. And we are involved in South Africa on, as indicated on the one slide, that we also indicated within SADC. We are currently busy with the harmonization of legislation. We, I think, already have four, which are vital for trade. We're also involved in AFRIMETS, which is an African forum on metrology, which also the aim is to look to harmonizing within Africa legislation so we can improve cross-border trade. And I see we also have a tripartite one, which is the COMESA, SADC, so there are these couple of initiatives which are going on throughout the world. There are other, for instance, the Asia Pacific have a legal metrology forum with the same aim as harmonization of legal metrology legislation within the Asia Pacific. There's one in the South in Americas, SIM. There's one in Europe, which is WALMEC, which deals with the whole of Europe. And there is one in the old Soviet states called Kurmet. And they all have the same main objective, is to try and see if we can harmonize legal metrology legislation throughout the world to promote trade and to protect, of course, our citizens and our industry. In that basis, I hope that answers the question. If not, I'll continue a try again.
Yeah, if he is not satisfied, we'll show you a room where both of you will go somewhere. Honorable Nyambi.
Thank you. As you quite correctly indicated, that we are expecting them to be available when we go to provinces to meet the briefing. I can start by maybe premising what are the reasons that you are quite aware that there's a national council of provinces who are representing the interests of provinces. And once we go to these provinces to make briefings, you might have seen how something was coming out very strongly about what they had that views on it dealing with the previous one. So if we go to provinces and people are representing the interests of provinces, we don't go there to ask you questions. We go with you so that we can support each other in clarifying what might be raised by colleagues. I'm checking what is here, Chair. I've got some few issues. The first one is in relation to the you are having offices in 5 provinces out of the 9. But in the 5-10 years, there is a vision that you might extend and cover almost all the other provinces, the 9 of them. Not only that, but you are still going to add to the other provinces where you are having provinces currently, which will, with an exception of the state, the others will be, it means Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, they will be having 2 instead of 1. Maybe a little bit of elaboration, what informs that, so that we can have that understanding. And the other thing, if I was speaking on behalf of my friend next to me, we will always talk of these triangles. Gauteng, Western Cape, and you go to KwaZulu-Natal. From the what you are presenting to us, you've had 3 workshops in this very thing. Exactly. You are still leaving the other out. Maybe if you can clarify that one. Then the last one. It's about the issue that will always, from time to time, being raised by provinces when we're coming with the new bill in relation to financial implications. It's not coming out clearly, it's just saying, no, it's the allocation that is from DCI will deal with that aspect. Maybe if you can clarify that one, then I'll be at ease and I can go to my province with whosoever that will be with us on that particular day and thanks,
Jeff. I just want an honest answer. How many minutes would you need to respond to that? Because it's after 1. So that if you go over those minutes, you'll buy lunch. 1 minute. Thanks, DDG. 1 minute.
Okay, if I can. The 5 provinces were decided on quite a while ago, and we have not been able to expand due to financial implications, and that is why this new bill is allowing for the collection of levies to enable us to have more financial ability to open up other offices. The reason that there will be 2 offices in some provinces would be based on the amount of economic activity, amount of business. So, for instance, if you take Gauteng, we are stationed in Pretoria, and we have to drive to Johannesburg every day. That's an hour there and an hour back. If we had a Joburg office, we would have to have quite a bit of traveling, which become a little bit more productive, or quite a more productive. Western Cape, George is one of the hubs. Would also be the same sort of argument, and that is our current plan. That does not mean that going forward, if the Free State as other hubs which develop, that we open up another office there. If I can just give a little bit of history, before, when we were still with the DDI, before we came to the SABS, we had 15 offices in all the then there were only four provinces, but we had in Newcastle and Klerksdorp, and we had a whole lot of offices which were closed because we were downsized. In hindsight, was not a very good idea, but now we're trying to rectify that. And those offices will develop with time, but currently this plan we put on the table is what we see in the next 5 to 10 years. I don't know whether that answers both your questions.
Now, you're at my mercy whether to say you've made it in 1 minute or more.
We'll just have to see if your watch was calibrated.
Okay, thanks very much. I'll only go to Wazul Natal and go with me. That's where I'll get you. But thank you very much for this presentation and to honorable members. And I want to say a special thanks to all provincial lending officers. Hey, you ready to attend this meeting? I hope Honorable Adams and Honorable Sinclair and Honorable Yambi and Mugoni and Igrams will really fulfill this wish that before the term ends, you have got a good cry. Just to thank you. But just for this meeting, thanks very much. You always attend and you always report to your... You are the people that are on backstage and you're not recognizing me. So thanks very much. You'll hear from Honorable Abrams when this party is going to be. Thanks very much. See you in our provinces. This meeting stays adjourned.
I'm going to start buying the
gifts. That is so kind of me.
Okay.